Our eyes can only process a narrow range of the energy called light. We can't see past infrared or ultraviolet. Many things are real, even though we can't see them. Life on this Earth is not limited to what our five senses can detect. There's an entire world out there existing in the realm of the spirit. Today, a series begins that tells us about that world and how we relate to it. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Today, Erwin Lutzer begins a series on the invisible world, where battles are lost and won. Listen now as we learn that as believers, we're living in two worlds.
The message today is entitled The Invisible World and Actually Living in Both Worlds. I think it was 1897 that H.G. Wells wrote his famous novel entitled The Invisible Man. In that novel, through various experiments, a man was able to make himself invisible. But the problem is he could not reverse the process, and that's where the intrigue began. I heard a story about a doctor, and his receptionist said, "You know, doctor, in the waiting room there is an invisible man." And the doctor said, "Well, tell him I can't see him right now." Well, there is an invisible world. It's the world of God and angels and demons and heaven and hell, and it's the world that we're going to be exploring in this series of messages. And rather than this simply being theology and an exploration that might become theoretical, what we're going to do is to actually look into the scriptures and see people who encountered the invisible world and what they learned as a result of it. Whether it's Jacob who's asleep outside in the wasteland and discovers that God is in that place, whether it is John near the end of the series, we'll talk about his vision of heaven. We're going to be exploring the invisible world through the experiences of people. And I hope that you make sure that you are a part of this series. Today, as we talk about life in both worlds, I'm going to begin with the problem of sorrow and affliction and unanswered questions. Because you and I know that in this world, with all of its pain and suffering, unless we have a good vision of the invisible world, we are very hopeless indeed. But all of us, even though we believe God is good, even though we believe his promises, we've got all kinds of issues and problems that we are seeking for answers for, and many of those answers will not come to us in this life. How do we put up with that, and how do we do it? My wife and I have had the privilege of being in Paris, France, and we've been next to the Eiffel Tower. If you were to look at the Eiffel Tower, say, from 3 feet away, what you would see is rusty steel, all kinds of bolts and rivets. Quite frankly, it looks ugly. But if you back away, say, a half a mile and look at the Eiffel Tower, then you can see its symmetry and its beauty, and you know that those ugly, rusty bolts and the steel actually are a part of a much larger, much grander plan and picture. That's what we're going to do in this message. We're going to look at matters up close, the visible world, and then we're going to back up and we're going to see the invisible world and see how the invisible world informs the visible. And we're going to get the short perspective, the narrow perspective, but also the long-term perspective. That's where we're going. The passage of Scripture is 2 Corinthians chapter 4, and I do hope that you brought your Bibles with you, as you do all the time, I'm sure. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, the Apostle Paul reminds us that no matter how difficult life is, we should not lose heart. As a matter of fact, he mentions that twice in chapter 4, that we should not lose heart. And he talks about his own struggles and his own trials, how there's so much opposition, and yet he keeps going. And then he says in verse 16 of chapter 4, 2 Corinthians, "So we do not lose heart. Though our outer nature is wasting away, our inner nature is being renewed day by day. What he has in this passage is three contrasts. The contrast between the material world and the immaterial world, the seen world and the unseen world. And those are the contrasts that we are going to look at today because we do live in both worlds. The first contrast that Paul mentions there, and we've already read it, is the contrast between the outer nature that is wasting away and the inner nature that is being renewed day by day. First of all, let's talk about the outer nature. Let's talk about our bodies. Old age, as you and I know, is irreversible, it is visible, and it is continuous. We're told that the process of death happens as soon as you are born, and there's nothing that you can do to reverse it and to reverse the final verdict of our mortality, and that is death. You can't get out of it. Today we live at a time when I would describe it as the cult of the body. The cult of the body is that the only thing that really matters is the body, how you look and how you feel. And everybody wants to live real long, but nobody wants to grow old. So they're in the midst of that dilemma. But when death comes, there will be nothing you can do to stop it. You can argue against it. You can steel your will against it. You can have all the optimism in the world. And when death comes, there you will be. And there's no way out of that event. So first of all, we look at the visible world, our bodies. But then Paul says the inner world is being renewed day by day, the inner nature. You know, for those of you who are investigating Christianity, you should remember that Christianity is very unique. Because it teaches that God actually comes to dwell in the human heart and to give us a new nature. This is known as the new birth. And because of that new birth, there is within us a transformation of our desires, our aptitudes, and who we are, because this change has been wrought in our hearts by God. It changes what we love, and it changes what we hate. And this new nature that is implanted in us by God, with all of the struggles still of the old nature, it is being renewed day by day, even as the outer world is wasting away. Because your inner world is part of the invisible world. As a matter of fact, in this series, I hope to preach a message just on the human soul, because it's part of the invisible world, but it also connects with the invisible world. It is really part of both worlds. So the Apostle Paul is saying here, though our outer man perishes, the inner is renewed. You know, those who work with older people say that when some people become senile, they'll actually become very angry, very obstinate, very difficult to get along with, and maybe even vulgar. And it has been said, and it's probably true, that I don't want to say too much about that and make heavy weather of it, but it's probably true that that nature is the true person. It's just that as they were living, they were able, because of social restraints, to keep that all inside. But there's another aspect, and that is there are Christians who have become old and their body has become weary, and they have entered into even senility, but it has been sweet senility. Their inner nature is still being renewed day by day, being prepared for heaven. Something else about Christianity is it's the only religion that has an answer to the problem of guilt and the soul that you brought with you today, the stain of sin and regret that we spend so much time denying. Because that inner nature, being renewed and being cleansed by God day by day, being fitted for its heavenly existence. So Paul says that the first contrast is between the inner nature and the outer nature that is decaying, and the inner nature that is being renewed day by day. There's a second contrast, and that is between the suffering of this present world and the glory. Now listen to this. He says in verse 17, "For this slight momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison." Wow. The imagery that I like to think of when I read this is of a scale. Now, some of you teenagers, you need this explained to you. There used to be scales that I was aware of when I was growing up as a boy that really had weights on them. So you had this balance. Over here, you know, you could put a 2-pound weight, for example, a 2-pound weight of iron. And on this side, then, you'd put enough meat to balance it. And so you know that you would have 2 pounds of meat. I just want you to visualize it. And I see it very clearly in my mind because there was this grocer that my parents were at. And as a boy, as I looked at this scale, it had kind of a bowl on one side with a little hole in it. And I put my finger in there. And the storekeeper was not at all pleased with me. And I therefore remember these scales with a clarity that I'm trying to forget. Now, what Paul is saying is take one side of the scale and let's call it afflictions. Fill it up. How would you fill it? Maybe cancer, maybe terminal cancer. Maybe heart problems. Maybe unemployment. Maybe a ruptured relationship. Maybe a divorce. Perhaps poverty. The abuse that you endured as a child. Just take all of your afflictions and put it on this side of the scale. Every single affliction. And then on the other side of the scale, what you do is you put the eternal weight of glory, which is the imagery here that Paul is using. And Paul says that because of the comparison, the scale would go plunk. It would be like putting a fly on one side and an elephant on the other. There is no comparison in the world to come. The invisible world in which we shall have an eternal weight of glory. And if you ask the question, what is that eternal weight of glory? I believe it is not only the fact that we will have glorified bodies and be in the presence of God. When we finally know that we mean something to God, that He loves us, and that His attention is on us, and He enjoys our company and our fellowship, with no sin to intervene, that will be our glory to His honor, to His praise, and it is an eternal weight beyond all comparison. I think when I look at the text, Paul has a couple of other ideas in mind too, based especially on Romans chapter 8. I think that Paul is saying that it is not just that we are going to enter into glory, but he would also, I think, agree that affliction makes us desire the glory. Affliction makes us desire the glory. You know, if you go to a refugee camp and you find Christians there, many of whom have perhaps starved to death or who have died in terrible situations, they will be singing and thinking and praying about heaven all the time. Here in America, if you're healthy and well and young, you think of heaven only as a concept. But when you are close to heaven, and when your loved ones have gone on, you begin to think that affliction indeed breeds within you this wonderful desire for glory. But I think there's even more in the text, and that is this. That what Paul is really saying is, the more affliction, the more glory. That's why he says in Romans 8, the suffering of this present world is not worthy to be compared with the glory that shall be revealed in us. Oh, I say to you today, if you are out of fellowship with Jesus because life is hard, if you are walking distantly because you feel that you have been dealt such a wrong card, and you see everybody else prosper and you've been overlooked and because of your background and circumstances, life is tough. I urge you today, draw near to Jesus, because God will make it up for you 1,000 times in the invisible world to come. Can you believe that? Paul is saying that no matter how much we go through in this life, this is not the end. There is glory coming, and the greater the affliction, the greater the glory. That should make even the most defeated, angry Christian smile. It is going to get better. Now, there's a third contrast. The first is the inner versus the outer. The second is the suffering versus the glory that is to come in the invisible world. And by the way, this invisible world that we're talking about is going to become very, very visible. I was going to point this out at the beginning. Just because we're talking about the invisible world does not mean it's somehow an unreal world. It is as real as this world, and someday we shall become a part of it and experience it. Well, this is Pastor Lutzer, and indeed the invisible world exists. You know, as you're going to find out as you continue to listen to this series of messages, if God were to open our eyes, we'd be amazed at what is in the atmosphere. Angels, demons, God, all of these aspects of reality are out there. But meanwhile, we, of course, seem to be bogged down, aren't we, in the very visible world. But the Apostle Paul and others in the New Testament keep instructing us and telling us that what we have to do is to put our eyes and our hope in the world to come. You know, we're going through a very difficult time in America. It's a time of discouragement. It's a time when people don't know where to turn. And one of the things that really ought to motivate us is the knowledge of the fact that eternity is coming and that the invisible world is very real. I hope that you stay tuned, because in a moment I'm going to be answering a question that was sent to us by one of our listeners. And we appreciate so much your involvement, your prayers, your gifts for the continuation of this ministry. Together we are making a difference, sharing the gospel with those who don't know Christ, encouraging believers, because all of us are en route to the finish line, and I hope that we are all successful. So from my heart to yours today, I hope that you have a good day, and remember, eternity is coming, and the invisible world is very real. God bless you. See you right here next time.
Erwin Lutzer, introducing Living in Two Worlds, the first of 8 messages on the invisible world. In a moment, I'll have a word about tomorrow's running to win. First, though, a story of tough times when a pastor mistreats a church member. Time now for another chance for you to ask Pastor Lutzer a question about the Bible or the Christian life. Sometimes it's very clear that pastors are only human. A listener named Kelly wrote asking for advice about this sticky situation at her church. My question involves forgiveness and reconciliation. My husband and I recently left the church we'd attended for the last several years. There were issues my husband needed to talk with our pastor about, and tried on several occasions to schedule a time with him to discuss them in person. After failing in this respect, my husband addressed the issues in a letter. This finally got the pastor's attention, who then scheduled a meeting with him. But rather than a one-on-one discussion, which would likely have addressed the issues without drama, the pastor called the church board, which includes mostly family members, as well as other deacons in the church, to confront my husband. They charged him with disparaging remarks being spread about the church leadership and sowing strife among church members. My husband respectfully left the meeting, and we left the church. Was the pastor right in the way he confronted my husband? We've forgiven him, and we still pray for their church and ministry, but should we also seek reconciliation?
Well, Kelly, without knowing the other side of the story, hearing only your side, it certainly appears as if you and your husband were mistreated. Of course it was wrong for the pastor to call your husband in and then bring others to that meeting without him knowing in advance what he was getting into. That was manifestly unfair. When you go to a meeting, you should know in advance who's going to be there. Secondly, it seems as if they charged your husband with something that he wasn't guilty of. You're saying that they accused him of spreading all these rumors in the church about the leadership and so forth, and your letter implies that he didn't do that. So obviously this matter, it appears as if it was vastly overblown. Were you wronged? Yes. Should you seek reconciliation? Well, yes, that would be wonderful. If you want to write a letter to your pastor, I think that you want to reconcile with him, fine. But I think he also has to own his side of the story. You can't simply reconcile if he says, okay, admit that you are all wrong and I was all right. You know, I sometimes point out that often it is impossible to reconcile with some people because they make demands that you absolutely cannot fulfill. They expect you to say that it was all your fault when, in point of fact, responsibility may be shared. So yes, you can write him a letter, you can probe the possibility of forgiveness, but if he makes demands that you legitimately cannot meet, then I think you simply have to drop the matter. But you've done right by forgiving, by giving all of your anger over this situation to God. Because remember, whatever we don't forgive, we pass on. So it's another example, isn't it, that even believers have feet of clay. We can all make mistakes. We can all disappoint. But remember, finally, Jesus hasn't done anything wrong. Stay with him.
Some wise counsel for Kelly from Dr. Erwin Lutzer. Thank you, Pastor Lutzer. If you'd like to hear your question answered, go to our website at rtwoffer.com and click on Ask Pastor Lutzer. Or call us at 1-888-218-9337. That's 1-888-218-9337. For the things which are seen are temporary. The things which are not seen are eternal.
Well, there is an invisible world. It's the world of God and angels and demons and heaven and hell. And it's the world that we're going to be exploring in this series of messages. What we're going to do is to actually look into the scriptures and see people who encountered the invisible world and what they learned as a result of it.
Erwin Lutzer opens a door to the unseen, a door which shows us the conflict between light and darkness.
Knowledge from the dark side. People are seeking for hidden knowledge. The way in which most people get into the occult is through divination.
The dark side offers more than knowledge. It offers power.
Today I'm going to be speaking on charms and ceremonies and sorcery and rituals and curses and all of those things that exist in the spirit world that people in one way or another are connected to.
But the invisible world also guarantees a wonderful future for believers who suffer while on earth.
There is no comparison in the world to come. The invisible world in which we shall have an eternal weight of glory.
The invisible world, 8 eye-opening messages by Erwin Lutzer, will be sent on CD as our thank you for your gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Call right now at 1-888-218-9337. That's 1-888-218-9337. Or write to Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. Online, reach us at rtwoffer.com. The Bible tells of a life beyond this life, in which all the wrongs of this world are made right. That gives us hope. Tomorrow, more about living in two worlds. and why it's the next world that makes the present one bearable. For Dr. Erwin Lutzer, this is Dave McAllister. Running to Win is sponsored by the Moody Church.